Welcome to another Principle of Hospitality summer series. I'm your host as always, Sean DeVries. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode. I hope your January is starting to kick off well. Now, this was an episode that we did last year with Matt Wiley from Rebar in Sydney. It was exceptional. It's the first no-waste bar in the world, and they're absolutely going great guns. So this is a conversation we had just before they opened. I hope you really, really enjoy it. Welcome to Principle of Hospitality, the podcast. It is fantastic to have you listening along, so thanks for tuning in. Rebar is the world's first permanent no-waste bar, and it's set to open in the newly restored South Everleigh precinct in March this year. It's an inspiring collaboration between the hospitality heavyweights, Matt from Scout and Maurice from Iceberg's Dining Room and Bar here in Sydney. Rebar is a bar built from the ground up to be the world's best, and with the kind of drinks program that Matt Wiley does and is known for on a global stage, it's going to be absolutely fantastic. So it's fantastic to have Matt on the podcast today. Matt, so thanks so much for being on the podcast. How did you actually start out in the industry and get going? Because I think that'd be a really good story to tell.
Yeah, it kind of started by accident, really. I think most people in hospitality, it happens by accident. Mm-hmm. I used to be a cricket player when I was younger.
No way.
And that was quite kind of 15, 20 years ago when being a professional cricket player was a little bit different to how it is now. Mm-hmm. Now they're cricketers are athletes, whereas back then it was kind of very social.
Yes.
It was, we were always on the kind of on the circuit of going out when we were young. And we got to know a lot of the bartenders and the bar managers and in different venues. And when I stopped playing because of injury, probably 16, 17 years ago now. Mm-hmm. It was a kind of a natural progression from a drunk sportsman to a bartender. I was in a bar on a Friday night, and the manager asked me if I could help because someone didn't turn up for work. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of at a crossroads. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I kind of could have carried on playing cricket probably a little bit, but I couldn't throw and I wanted to be good. I'm really competitive, so I kind of knew that I had to stop playing cricket. And I jumped on the bar for an event, and I was awful.
Right.
Really terrible. But I had one of the best times ever. I really enjoyed interacting with people. I enjoyed the social aspect, but I also enjoyed actually having a different skill. Mm-hmm. And learning something new. Mm-hmm. So that was, and he had another event the night after. He asked me if I would work again, and it kind of snowballed from there, really. And I obviously had a few friends in town, so I seeked out their advice and asked them about Martin and asked them if they could train me. I'm really competitive, so I like being better. I'm not saying good, but I like getting better and improving. Mm-hmm.
Was it coming from, you know, when you first sort of started out, was it what you thought it was going to be, or did you have no sort of preconceived ideas of what bartending or working behind a bar was actually going to be like?
I think bartending back then was exactly what you would expect it to be like.
Yes.
It was much more of a party. There was a real party vibe, and it was kind of, you worked really hard, but you kind of played hard on your days off as well. Mm-hmm. But it's changed a lot since then. Mm-hmm. There's obviously an aspect of that where there's certain venues where people would still party and there's like this party atmosphere, but nightclubs, there's not as many nightclubs around anymore, and there's a lot more sitting down drinking. There's less vertical drinking.
Yes.
So the atmosphere of how people interact and drink in the bars has changed. So it definitely was like it was then, but it's definitely changed now.
Yeah. How did it come about that you came to sort of be in Australia and start to do this project with Maurice in Sydney? Because obviously you've got a fantastic, you know, London accent. So like, how did it come about?
Scout, we'd been open for a few years and it was kind of getting established in London. Mm-hmm. My wife, she's born and bred London. I'm from Nottingham, and I'd moved to London around 13 years before, and she'd always wanted to experience living somewhere else. She wanted to live where the climate was better. She wanted, and so did I. I was getting a bit older.
Yep.
And it was time to maybe look at how we were going to get older and in a different city.
Yes.
So she'd actually never been to Australia before, and she was putting all her faith and trust in me. And we'd kind of started the visa process, and we were looking at moving to Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of in the August. We were planning to move in November. In the August time, the Iceberg guys got in touch with me via email and asked me if I would be interested in flying over to do a bring scout to the icebergs and do a pop up for a night, and then mm-hmm. do an evening at the Dolphin.
Wow.
So I kind of packed all my booze and flew Sydney for three nights.
Wow.
Three or four nights. And then it's on the Saturday, we were doing prep. I met with Morris and kind of hit it off. We did the pop up. It was really busy and huge success. And he kind of asked me what my plans were. And I told him I was moving to Melbourne. And he kind of pondered on it a little bit. And the next day he was like, would you ever consider doing something in Sydney?
Mm.
And I was like, hell yeah. I was really excited by that. So then the conversation grew over the next sort of month into October. And then we totally changed our angle. We were like, let's go to Sydney. And we did the scout pop-up for the year on top of the Dolphin.
Wow.
And it kind of carried on from there, really.
Did it feel a bit surreal when that sort of happened? You know, you come here for a cool event, what you're thinking was a pop-up for 3 days, and then all of a sudden you've got this collaboration that had sort of started. Was that big, what you were hoping for?
Especially like you get on a plane from London and it's still summer, but it's not summer like here. And then you arrive at night, you wake up in the morning, you walk out on Bondi and there's like people surfing and you like walk into icebergs and it's incredibly surreal. And there's not many restaurants with the same feeling that icebergs give you when you're sat on top of the ocean.
Yeah.
So I was literally mind blown by the venue. And then I flew my wife to the other side of the world, and she was like, "What?" It was raining when we landed. It was, the weather was awful. And I was like, just bear with me. It'll change in the morning. And it did. We went and saw the beach, and it was, and just sitting there, having taken a meeting after getting off the plane for 24 hours, was this roller coaster of like 2 months of, we're going to Melbourne, we're going to Sydney, and now she's like, I can't, you, if you'd have took me to Melbourne, I'd have divorced you. It was like, she absolutely loves it. Yeah. She loves the beach. She loves the ocean and the lifestyle that living in and around Bondi gives us and the total opposite of what our life was like in London. And yeah, we're especially in the last year, we're really, really thankful to be here.
Mm-hmm. Are there any major differences between sort of London bars and Australian bars, especially Sydney bars, as you sort of see it? Like, was there any sort of stark comparisons?
I think so. I think because of the sheer volume of population difference and the amount of international travellers that all come through London.
Yes.
I think, and there's such a vast amount of bars. There's five great bars on every street.
Yep.
So to have that level of competition, it pushes people in a. I think bars are a lot more creative and they live a little bit more on the edge.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. What can be a cocktail?
Yes.
And how creative you can be, because it doesn't matter if there's some people don't like it, because there's other people that do.
Yep.
Whereas here, I think you have to please a few more people. You have to be a little bit safer.
Interesting.
And plus, the climate's different as well. You don't necessarily want to be drinking like stirred down and boozy drinks all the time when it's like 35 degrees outside. You want something long and spritzy, and you want to be able to have a couple of them because you want to be refreshed.
Yeah. So has that made you think about, you know, the alcohol programs that you sort of put up and making sure that you're sort of reflecting that a bit more, or are you allowed to sort of pull some stuff from the UK?
I think actually it's a good business model. Like getting people to drink four drinks instead of two is it works from a business sense.
Yes.
But also, it's mindful of the fact that of how much alcohol people are drinking at the same time.
Yes.
So I think it's it works in every different aspect, and you have to play to this, to the strengths of your local market. You can't, it's dumb to think you can change a city by one cocktail menu.
Yeah. 100%.
You just can't do that. You have to look at the demographic of people, see what they're drinking, and then try and work your narrative into how people drink.
Yep. Let's talk about Rebar and how that sort of came about. And I want to talk about the sustainability focused, obviously. I said in the start there about it being a no waste bar. Like, how did that come about, and why the focus on sustainability?
We kind of already been doing it with Scout anyway. Like, mm-hmm. Scout set out to be a bar that focused solely on things from the British Isles.
And right.
The reason for that is that produce is flown all around the world every day, because humans have the incessant need to want things instantly, mm-hmm. Like bananas and pineapples and all these things that, you know, they come from the other side of the world, and we just expect them on the supermarket shelves. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do a bar that actually championed what was in the British Isles, but actually looked for solutions for how we could live without the abundance of food because food's going to run out.
Yeah.
At the rate that the world is evolving, we're not going to be able to produce food fast enough. So, mm-hmm. And then as the time went on and the concept grew, we kind of we looked at it a bit more. We were like, actually, we're buying something from Scotland, mm-hmm. which is the British Isles, mm-hmm. or Ireland. But Northern France is closer to London than Scotland.
Yes.
Why are we, let's narrow this down a little bit. So mm-hmm. we started to go a little bit closer to home with London, and we have a forager called John the Poacher.
Cool.
An incredible, incredible man. He'll come in and he'll have rabbits, or he'll have all kinds of things on him. But
yeah, awesome.
He forages for us every week with things that, sometimes walks, he sometimes gets just a normal London bus,
yep.
out to the marshes, and he goes and forages most of our produce for us. Mm-hmm. So we look at how far things travel and this sort of aspect of how we live on our living off the land where you are.
Yes.
And I think most countries can do it, and especially Australia. Australia's massive, but flying some produce from Queensland is, or driving it through the States, is huge. Mm-hmm. So to go, yeah, we're in Australia, there's different climate every single day.
Yep.
And produce is incredible here, but it's also really, it travels a long way. So, but on the same back of that, we also repurpose a lot of the things that we make into food. Mm-hmm. And we look at how wasteful we are as a bar in Scout in London. So it's kind of when the pop-up finished in Sydney, it was, you know, what's the next iteration? I didn't want to do another Scout. Although at the time when it finished, I was like, yeah, let's do another Scout. I'd unfinished business with what I wanted to achieve.
Yes.
But as COVID came in, we started to evaluate, and I didn't really want to do another Scout. I wanted to take what we were doing already, mm-hmm. and do another iteration of it. Mm-hmm. And really just another iteration of that. It's just about looking at produce in a different way.
Yes.
We're still going to be getting produce day in, day out. It's just going to be, we're just diverting from landfill instead of ordering it from our fruit and veg supplier.
Yes.
Most of it will still come up from our fruit and veg supplier, but it'll be the things that a grower or a supplier in the Flemington market can't sell.
Yes.
Yep. Still great produce. It's still going to be whole, incredible plums or pears or whatever produce, bananas or whatever produce it is. But instead of it going in the bin, it's going to come to Reap. Mm-hmm. It's not. It will be an element of, you know, is a restaurant wasting, you know, 5 kilos of strawberries? Come and take them. There will be an element of that. But day in, day out, it's going to be produce from a supermarket or a grower or the markets that they're going to throw away.
How have you been able to build those supply chains, Matt? Because like what you're talking about is quite revolutionary. You know, you talk about it very normally, which is fantastic, but like that's very different to what a lot of, you know, restaurant owners, cafe owners, bar owners are doing right now. So how have you sort of built those relationships with those suppliers?
I think I'm talking like it's a done deal and everything's going to be plain sailing. It's going to be easy, yeah. But there's going to be a lot of bumps in the road.
Yeah.
And we're kind of working with our, I think initially when we open, we're going to be working with our supplier, and we're setting up kind of a WhatsApp group with my team and the guys in the market.
Smart.
And we're going to try and work 48 to 24 hours in advance of what we would get from them. So they, when they go out to the market to buy all the produce for the restaurants they supply.
Yes.
They would go and talk to the guys and go, you know, we've got this, and they'll take a photo and they'll send us a photo of all the things that is available to us. And we'll go, yes, no. Mm-hmm. And then it will be delivered to us, and we'll still pay for the produce. We're still going to pay because, you know, we're getting something, and although it's not going in the bin, it'd be good for us to give some money back to the people that are going to make a loss.
Yes. Just makes a heap of sense.
Yeah. It sits within the circle of like how everyone benefits.
Mm. Can you take us through also the fit out? Cause I know you've taken sustainability as a model and thought process through the fit out as well. So how have you managed to do that as you're fitting out the venue right now?
We stood inside the venue, and it's a heritage listed site in the locomotive workshops. And we stood inside, and at the time we were kind of working out the layouts of how it would work. There was a mezzanine in already. There was an old security office. So there's a mezzanine with lots of like old railway steels. And then we were saying, cut that out. We need to cut that one. We need to put a new one in. It was like, why don't we reuse that one? And it just clicked. It clicked instantly with myself and the designers, the guys from Alfred who were designing it. Stu and Ren really sort of ran with it hard. And they were like, just let's process this a little bit, and let's see how we can transfer what we're doing on the daily operation into how we build.
Yes.
One of the center I-beam that runs through the middle and the upright is literally from the other side of the room spun around. Mm-hmm. And now that supports the mezzanine. And then we've looked at our light fittings. We've looked at the materials that as the mezzanine is wrapped in a recycled plastic, the toilet, and all of the upstairs is wrapped in the plastic. Mm-hmm. Bar top is the same. It's all from a company called Replas in Melbourne. Mm-hmm. And we've diverted from landfill 66,000 milk bottles.
Wow.
From our venue alone. And it's just by being clever with that, you know, like what's out there. And these guys have been doing it for 30 years.
Yeah.
We're like, this must be new. You know, are we going to, how's it look? Do we have to fly it around the world to get it in? We start to like look, and there's a few places in the UK that are doing it.
Yeah.
And then the Alfred guys are like, no, we've used these guys called Replas before. Let's get some samples in. And it comes from Melbourne. Yeah, and they make park benches, they make walkways, they make all kinds of stuff. But physically building a fit out of a bar, and I think no one's really done it before.
Yeah.
So we're like, how do we fix it? And they're like, we don't know. So we've done a lot of tests, a lot of samples. The first sample we stuck them side by side, and we tested about 20 different glues. They didn't work, they didn't stick.
Wow.
So we've had to build in a specific way with some ethically sourced wood as the structural part behind it, mm-hmm. to hold it in place, because when it gets warm, it likes to move, and when it gets cold, it likes to move back to where it was before. So it's kind of its own being, mm-hmm. But it looks amazing. With the seating, the banquet seating that runs along one wall, that's been made from out of a material called Pinotech, mm-hmm. which is pineapple leaf fiber.
Wow.
The lampshades are made out of mushroom. All of the seating wood is made out of EcoPly, which is the most sustainably sourced wood in New Zealand and Australia.
Wow.
And obviously there's certain aspects of it that, you know, you have to build it to a specific code in Australia.
There's some trade-offs.
So there's things that we've not been able to get around, mm-hmm. But there's things that we've been able to work with the local council as well. For instance, we had to do a plan of management. There's like this in-depth thing of how we're going to operate as a business from mm-hmm. from the minute we open the door to the minute we close at nighttime, and whatever happens, how are we going to solve it? And one of them was our waste disposal.
Yes.
And it's a standard thing from City of Sydney Council, is that you have to have this amount of bins, and they have to be inside your venue. And we're like, we don't need them. And then it was like two red tops, a yellow top of, mm-hmm. you know the score.
Yeah.
And we're like, we don't need them. We need the tiniest bins to capture the tiniest amount of waste that we're going to maybe produce.
Yeah.
But our idea is we're taking waste from somewhere else. We're repurposing it to sell. We've got them to remove our glass crusher, because as I said, we needed to have a glass crusher inside it. So I think we're allowed to waste 27 bottles a week. It's inevitable that there'll be some waste, glass waste, mm-hmm. but we're figuring out how we grind that and how we use it somewhere else. We're working with a glassware producer, and we're working how we can make glass out of the spirit bottles. Do we save them up and make a green line and a blue line, mm-hmm. like we're purchasing already? So there's things that we need to solve in to get to be a zero waste bar.
Yes.
But the main idea is taking food waste and diverting it from landfill. Mm-hmm. That's our main goal. We're working with our spirit suppliers to reduce how much packaging comes into our venue.
Yes.
You know, we're working at buying bulk, and then getting a jerry can and then sending the jerry can back, and then having one bottle in venue, so we don't need bottles.
I was gonna ask you about that. Like, how detailed have you gone? Have you made it so that suppliers aren't delivering in cardboard boxes? And, you know, obviously you're talking about the jerry can then. Like, that's super interesting. You're trying to do sort of the same when you have wine suppliers and stuff as well.
There's a company called Eco Spirits. Mm-hmm. They do a thing called an Eco Tote. So it's like a metal structure with a bladder inside.
Yep.
And you can have that on your bar. You can use it as an optic, so you can go 30 mil.
Yeah, right.
Or you can go 700 mil and it fills up a bottle.
Yeah, right. Wow.
They come in 25 litres and 4.5 litres. So we're going to have a couple of those. They only use their core range of spirits. It's not open to everyone because they're leading the technology of it. And I'm sure at some point they'll sell the technology to all the major players. Mm-hmm. The minute they're using their own core brands. We've got vermouth from Regal Rogue. That's coming in a goon bag. Our wine's coming in goon bags. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to work on how we replace the bladders for recycled material. Mm-hmm. And now we would look to recycle the cardboard. Does it go into something else? Are we using it elsewhere? Are we using it in packaging to send back the jerry can?
Yep.
There's so many different ways of reusing something. Mm-hmm. And there's solutions that we're actually going to document everything that we do. And every time we come up with a new solution, there'll be an open source on our website.
Wow.
And it'll just be a date, and it might be cardboard packaging, and we'll document like how we fix that for a bar. Yep. So at some point there'll just be a long list of things of the open source, where the produce came from, how much produce we got from that grower, mm-hmm. you know, how much did we save from landfill, mm-hmm. And become an open source for venues. And then at the same time, we're working on an initiative of how we create a concentric circular economy for bars in Sydney. How do we work together collectively, mm-hmm. as a group to minimize food waste? And so we're looking at working with 10 bars to start off with, where we would sit in a room, we'd workshop something that we would put on the table, everything that we know we waste. Mm-hmm. And we would, if I'm wasting oranges, mm-hmm. because I like to use the skin for a Negroni or a venue. Yep. They make loads of Negronis. They don't have enough orange juice. Mm-hmm. Can those oranges go to a coffee shop for them to give away free orange juice with a croissant?
Wow.
So then we're set, and then that becomes one path across. And then does that coffee shop have coffee grounds that they can make into a coffee liqueur, or someone can make into a coffee liqueur? So we're going to start really small and figure out, and so we can create a circle within the 10 bars as we leave the room. And we know that bar's going to take the oranges, they're going to take the coffee grounds, they're going to take the banana skin, and and it's done. And then we work out how we do it and how easy it was. What's the best way? Was it a weekly delivery? Was it a daily? Mm-hmm. How much did we waste? And we're going to document it over 4 weeks and start to build a blueprint of how bars can work together rather than being insular and being solely focused on profit with what you do. We can actually work together to generate more income for everyone.
It's incredible.
There's a company called Bintrim. They're a government EPO, mm-hmm. and they worked with I think it's Bintrim. They worked with the Hilton for a year, mm-hmm. to look at what goes in their bin. They basically audit bins, and then from auditing bins, they can then go back and look at, you know, did one slice of pizza go in the bin? And if that happens constantly, then your pizza's too big.
Yeah.
Your pizza's too big. You can reduce the size of your pizza, which means that then you don't have to order as many ingredients to make that pizza. So you're saving money. Mm-hmm. And they did this with the Hilton for a year, and they saved them $800,000.
Wow.
And that's one hotel in Sydney.
Do you think naturally, like, that's just where all bars or hospitality venues are going to have to go to think about these intrinsic things within inside the business, to think about food waste and think about it from obviously an environmental and a sustainability standpoint, but obviously a dollar standpoint? Because when I sort of started out in the industry, you know, we talked about wastage, but we talked about a percentage. We didn't talk about it as a, you know, we talked about it as a dollar figure. We never talked about it as a sustainability piece. Matt, like, do you think that's where it's changing now?
I think so. I think ultimately, as an industry, we have a responsibility to our planet.
Yep.
And how we know that we're overrunning the planet as humans, mm-hmm. and the hospitality industry is a great source of problems for the planet because of how much we integrate with the soil, because we need produce to be able to open.
Yep.
That counts for spirits. If it's a wheat being grown or corn or whatever spirits being made to, mm-hmm. you know, a beautiful tomato that comes that you put in a tomato salad, is mm-hmm. we touch soil and we're ruining the planet. So we have a responsibility in that respect. Mm-hmm. But I think ultimately it comes down to dollars.
Yeah.
And people talk dollars. And in the year that we've just had, everyone's going to have to make changes to their bottom line to survive.
100%.
And if you can, and I think so, I think it's actually easier to start the conversation around food waste and go, but until we get to a position where we can give you figures, until I can come to people and go, I'm going to save you X amount of money a year if you kind of look at this practice. Mm-hmm. So we kind of have to be a testbed for something anyway. We have to work out, you know, what's the value of what we're saving. Mm-hmm. How do we do it and how easy it was, mm-hmm. because there's some people who even the guys at the fruit market in Flemington were like, can you not put that in the bin? And they're like, no, it's easier just to throw it in the bin.
Yeah,
it's an old boy who's been selling fruit, mm-hmm. for 50 years at the market. He gets up at 3 a.m. to do his job.
Yep.
Or midnight or whenever he gets up, and at the end of a long shift through the night, he just wants to put it in the bin and go home and sleep. Mm-hmm. And so changing the thought process of, I want that. I want to eat it.
Yes.
But it's going to be a slow process, but it's a process. I think, you know, we'll get there and we'll be successful at how we change that landscape of how we talk about waste, mm-hmm. and how we change the thought process of that waste is delicious at the same time and not something that's rotting and gross that you've cut off.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, you're, you know, when we launch this, you guys will be hopefully open and trading. But obviously, you're at a period at the moment where you'd be, you know, recruiting people to work for you in this bar. Like, how are you making sure that people are on this journey with you and understand why you're doing this, Matt, and why you want to really focus on, you know, a no waste bar and sustainability? Has it been a challenge to get people really understanding in depth what you're trying to do here?
No, it's actually been quite easy.
It's good.
I've kind of employed like three senior guys that are just going to be working with me to start off with, mm-hmm. Until we can start to look at how we recruit like younger people to train and how we bring a bigger crew into us as we get busier. Mm-hmm. But we've picked people that, one, understand how we like to work, two, that can communicate in a way that is what people understand and is friendly. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, we're not going to talk about the bar as a concept.
Yeah.
If you come into the bar and you don't know what we do, you're just going to think it's a cocktail bar that you're going to drink delicious stuff. We're not going to talk about, we're not going to ram it down your face of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome you in like you would in any other bar, in any other setting in the world. And you might have left not knowing that everything you've touched was imperfect or from a reused angle. Mm-hmm. But if you sit down and go, hey, you look at things differently, can you tell us about it? We'll sit down and we'll tell you everything. Mm-hmm. But we want people to ultimately go into a bar is about hanging out with your friends, socializing, having a great time, leaving happier than when you arrived, and spending money for things that you really enjoyed.
Yep.
It's a simplistic way of being in a bar. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to get away from that.
Yeah. So you're really just trying to build a relationship there with the customer. And as they come in a bit more and as they get a bit more comfortable with the whole team, then the conversation can start to happen about what you're really doing.
You might have people who come like regulars for a year and not even know because they just want to sit at the bar and drink a Negroni and a beer.
Sure.
You know, we will still cater for people who just want a beer on tap. Mm-hmm. We'll still cater for people who just want a glass of sparkling wine at the end of a long day and they're celebrating.
Yep.
We'll still cater for someone who just wants to come in and eat those puffed beef tendons because they're delicious.
Yeah.
On their way back to the train, but at the same time, we'll be there if people were interested.
Mm-hmm. I know we're early days actually pre-opening this while we're recording this, but are you thinking that you want to recreate Rebar in other places, or are you trying with your, obviously you talked about before about, you know, the 10 bars that you want to work with and obviously slowly build communication and ways of working together. Is that where you sort of see the legacy of what you're trying to do here, Matt?
I think ultimately we started out as having this bar where we're going to do a little bit of education around what we do. So Monday, not touched on yet, but Mondays will be like an education day for non-industry.
Okay.
We'll communicate with people in the area that if you're interested in a whiskey tasting or if you're interested in how you might be able to repurpose things from your fridge that you're going to put in the bin into food and drink, we'll be holding educational classes. And we're going to wait till we've opened a little bit first and got into our space, and then we'll start talking and discussing those. But Mondays, we won't trade as a bar. We'll be an education platform.
Wow.
So it kind of started out as this like education platform / cocktail bar. Mm-hmm. That was going to focus on waste. And then as we've kind of communicated to various different people about what we're doing, as a bar is an idea has grown exponentially in the last year. Mm-hmm. So now there's plans, all kinds of plans for how we do the circular economy in Sydney, how we grow that from 10 bars to 100 bars. How do we take that to Melbourne? Mm-hmm. How do we take that to the major cities in Australia? Does that translate to, you know, New York?
Yes. Yeah.
Or a city in America where recycling is non-existent. But to take, that's like obviously a big picture, and how we've even discussed, like, is there a marketplace for waste? Can, instead of me, like I sat in with another EPA, mm-hmm. and they kind of said, what would you do with 2 tons of cucumber? And I was like, at the time of doing prep in my kitchen, because I don't have a bar because we're waiting to open.
Yes.
And we can't travel anywhere, so there's not very much. But it's kind of got, there was a few of us on the call, and it kind of got the conversation going, like, what would we do with 2 tons of cucumbers? What would we do with 4 tons or 5 tons of pumpkin after Halloween?
Yeah.
So, you know, and this was offered to us. There's a grower who grew cucumber based on the previous year's sales of what he grew and sold.
Right.
And restaurants were closed, so we had a glut of produce. Mm-hmm. And it, like, why don't we look at how we can work with growers to get produce and we put them into a market that the industry can log into and then they can get produce for free. Because it's great, it's cucumber that is good, that it can't be sold, it's just because there's such a vast amount of it.
Yes.
And how do we interact with the industry in Sydney to start off with? Do they have login details for our website and they place an order and they pay a service charge? That service charge is for the delivery and the guy who delivers it for you, mm-hmm. with a small percentage that gets put into a pot and then that gets distributed with everyone who's given us produce, so they're not going without.
Yes.
And this obviously is not something that happens overnight. And this is like a master plan, but without having a bar that shows that you can make money by doing this a different way and having a blueprint of how to do it, the whole thing falls apart.
Yeah.
There's this whole big plan of what we can do and how we can do it. Mm-hmm. But the little cog at the bottom that started out as the main cog, the bar, has to be successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have to make money. We have to show people that this can be a way of doing things. And it's a way that it helps you as a business owner, but it also helps the environment at the same time.
Yeah, you're actually looking to prove it, and there's no doubt in my mind that you and the team are going to do that, Matt. Like, it's just so inspirational. Like, just listening to what you're doing. Like, I think you're doing everything right by the industry and bringing together people en masse, which is just such an important part of this journey for you. So I really appreciate it.
Thanks, mate.
I want to ask one final question, which I'd normally ask all of my guests at the end of the podcast, and that's what are you most looking forward to this year? And I can probably guess very easily what you're most looking forward to this year, but maybe on a personal basis, away from this fantastic bar concept, like what else are you looking forward to this year?
I've been really fortunate in the last year because of kind of the way that the world's gone, and I've actually had a lot of downtime, mm-hmm. so. If you'd have asked me this question last year, I'd have been like, I'm really looking forward to seeing a bit of the country.
Yes.
But yeah, I've seen a little bit of it, but now the borders are reopening and because they've been closed, it's the one thing I'm really excited to do is get out and, see rural Australia.
Yes.
We're planning on doing a drive straight through the center of Australia.
Wow.
From Cairns to Perth.
That's
Stopping
a long
drive. Yeah, we're setting aside between 8 and 10 days.
Yep. Yeah.
One, because it's the adventures like excites me a lot, but two is just to see what Australia is.
Mm.
To start in the rainforest, drive through the desert, just to understand the people who live in this country. But also just that sense of adventure of like being free to do something like that.
Yeah, 100%.
That's one of the things I'm, other than actually standing behind a bar and physically making a cocktail for someone, which I'm really excited to do. I'm excited to travel and to connect with nature again.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be an exciting time, mate. I've been lucky enough to live around different parts of the country and I did the drive from Perth to Adelaide before across the Nullarbor, and that was a big deal for 2 or 3 days. So I think you're gonna have some fun. Matt, what's the best way that people can find out about Rebar and what you guys are doing?
We have a website, which is weare.com.au, mm-hmm. which in the minute is just a holding page, but you can sign up for newsletters.
Mm-hmm.
But also on Instagram is where we're most active,
mm-hmm.
which is @_weare.
Beautiful. As always, linked up in the show notes of this podcast. Matt Wiley, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, mate.